Hello, 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 and welcome to the Lynn Woods Gospel Entertainment Show, where we talk to inspire. Please like, follow, subscribe for free, download for free, and that way you never ever miss an episode of this uplifting, encouraging, and inspiring show. My guest today is author and broadcast journalist Esther Dillard, and she is here today to talk to us about her new and impactful book, Raising an Autistic Young Adult, A Parent's Guide to ASD Safety, Communication, and Employment Opportunities to Empower Black and Brown Caregivers and Their Families. Oh, I hope I got it out right, Miss Esther.
Yes, you did. Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate the time. That second part of the book, the subtitle is a long mouthful.
Yes, that's why we need to talk about it. But anyway, before we get into that, let's find out a little bit about you and your background before getting to this author stage and this book, because you're a broadcast journalist. But where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, on the east side of Buffalo. Grew up not very far from, you know, that tragic shooting that happened last year in that city. I grew up there, and my interests were pretty much like English, and I liked things that had to do with writing, and I always wanted to work with television, but I didn't know if I could ever do that. So what I did is I went to the State University of New York at Buffalo and worked a little bit in radio, their public radio station there, and somehow I got hip to a on-air intern staff reporter position after going to Syracuse University for my grad school. And when I got that gig, that's what kind of catapulted me to getting my first full-time gig at WGRZ in Buffalo, New York, as a news reporter, kind of mornings and afternoons and whatever they needed me to do. And eventually ran into my husband, who was working for radio. And his name is Skip Dillard, and he worked for WBLK. And kind of met on a blind date. Friend of ours who worked for the African Cultural Center said, I think that you might like him. And I was like, you know, I was like kind of like turned off at that point because I would have been trying to find a date, decent person, you know, at that time. You know how that dating scene you're doing?
Yeah, decent person.
I was like, no, this is not happening. So I just kind of pretty much had my mind that I was leaving the city of Buffalo as soon as I possibly could with kind of advancing my career. I had gotten an agent. I was looking and all that stuff. And then I ran into Skip and we hit it off. Great date and everything off. And eventually we got married within a year. And then my agent got me something in Philly. And so then we were on the track of, you know, you get a job, you follow me. I'd get a job, you follow me. You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we traveled all over the country, worked in Philadelphia. Then we moved to San Francisco, lived out there. And then we moved to the Michigan area where he worked in Detroit and I worked in Flint. And then we moved from there.
Oh, wow.
And then we went to D.C. I didn't get a job there. We were there only about 6 months or so. I got pregnant, and then we were heading to New York. And when he got here to New York, I was about 4 months or so pregnant. My agent had left the business, and I was with another agent who pretty much told me in not so many words that I was too old.
Oh, wow.
Finally got, I kind of figured I'd have to hang up my microphone because I was pregnant and I'm going to have a baby. And I was like looking for a job, and a friend, my husband's, who worked in education, said that there was a woman that was looking for someone to work to teach broadcast journalism at PWI, which is predominantly black college, PBI, predominantly black college. And it was called Bloomfield College, which is in Jersey. And so I stayed there I got hired there to teach what I know and knew for years, how to write and report and shoot and edit and all the skills that I had learned over the years. I was teaching students how to do. And so I did that for about 7 years.
Okay.
And then after that, I got offered an opportunity to work with the Black Information Network and And I was over the moon to be able to get back into the business. And so that is where I've been for the last 2 years doing reporting. I have a little studio in my house, and I'm able to do reports through Zoom or phone. And then if I do go out, I can go out and, you know, get it if I want to, that kind of thing. So I have a lot more flexibility and such. So I am loving my life right now.
Oh, wonderful. That's an interesting life you've done. I understand. Like, you've done anchoring, you've done the TV stuff and anchoring, you've done radio, and now the Black Information Network. That's a national thing there. So, and you can work from home. That's a blessing.
Yes, it is a blessing. It is a blessing.
So what do you feel about the industry today? I know you talked about, like, ageism. Oh, that's always constant. But then what's it been like being an African-American woman working in that white male-dominated industry of,
you know,
TV news?
Well, TV news definitely is a different animal than it used to be. I mean, before, it really was about having a good agent, having really good resume, really good work that you did on the air, you know, that showed that you could, you know, get some really good connections, write really good stories and connect to the audience. Now, it just seems like a lot of the newer people they're pulling them from a lot younger. Uh-huh. A lot of them may not have as much experience, and those who have experience, they don't want to pay us.
Yes.
So they want to get the younger person who they can kind of pretty much kind of groom, but then they may not have as much experience. And so a lot of the older African-American women, they're, you know, kind of forging their own way, doing things outside the box, creating their own platforms through social media and such. Some are doing businesses outside, trying to do additional things, knowing that, one, the money is not as good. Two, you know, there are only so many slots that they open for African Americans when it comes to, you know, on air. And, you know, things are definitely diversified. I mean, there's not, like, before it was only the big three, and you had a few things like Fox, and you had some opportunities in some spaces like CNN. There are some more online outlet type of things, but those positions, you definitely have to be kind of not a jack of all trades, but a lot more expanded in your skill set.
Well, so because was that they had? They used to call them
MMJ.
Yeah, and backpack, multimedia journalists and backpack journalists.
Yeah, and now they want, though, that's what definitely they're hiring now. They want people who can shoot, that can edit, that can go and get the story, produce the story, which, you know, I am not negative on that. That's not that I don't think it's a good idea in some cases, but in some cases when it becomes some areas where, you know, it can be dicey and dangerous, you definitely, I know I appreciated having somebody watching my back, the camera person while I was reporting. So then, you know, if somebody came up behind me or was going to do something crazy, we could jet, you know, and we watched each other's back. So it was kind of it was always a teamwork kind of thing. And when you're by yourself, it's a whole different animal where, you know, you're constantly, it can be very stressful, you know, as a person just out there doing everything by yourself.
But
you know,
on the other end for the networks or the station, that actually saves them money. Because three persons
a lot of money. But then in the end, though, they're putting themselves at risk, too. Because if you have a person who moves into a neighborhood where you're sending a woman at night shooting maybe a story that has to do with crime, or really early in the morning, there's always the possibility of someone assaulting her or whatever. And you've sent your employee out in a very risky situation, and then you put their lives at risk as well, you know. So those are things I think that a lot of managers are going to have to start thinking about more. I remember myself, you know, going with a photographer a couple different times to different doors, one of which I know the guy said, "I got a gun, get off my porch." We both jetted off the porch. So things you know, can get pretty bad. Now, if I was by myself, I would have been terrified, you know, like, you know, and I have been in places where, you know, the N-word was thrown out very, very straightforward, you know, get off my porch. And that has happened many, many times. So, you know, it's the risk that you take as a reporter, you know, because I've always loved telling stories and getting the other person's side of it. You know, when other people, you know, point the fingers of blame and say that, you know, this person's a bad person or whatever, I always try to make an effort to talk to that other person, because sometimes we don't know all the circumstances or all the details, and allow that person to at least get their chance to tell their side of it. So I've always been that kind of person that, like,
that was a very good insight into what was and what's going on now. So thank you very much in comparison, because I worked in syndicated radio. So I started in radio in St. Louis, but then what got into syndicated radio in Los Angeles, and did that for years, and ended up doing a lot of faith-based content. And like you, I've seen the industry change over the years. And it's been, let's just say, it's been interesting, Miss Esther Dillard. Now let's hop into some things about autism. So what drove you to want to write a book about autism, and what drives your interest in autism? Is it because of your child, or what was it?
Yeah, it really, what inspired this particular book really came out of a conversation between me and a parent about what they advise that I do to help my child if they should be stopped by a police officer. And I felt like that conversation, I was like, you know what, this is a conversation that other Black parents probably would need to hear. And then I thought, well, you know, because that's one particular perspective, you know, anyone who has a child on the autism spectrum always says that my child is unique. Every child on the spectrum is not the same. No one is a monolith. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different variations and things that other people deal with. You can't say everybody is, you know, you have to do it like this. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. So I really made an effort to pitch this to my network, the Black Information Network. I was like, would you be interested in me doing a story which has to do with how parents of children with autism, parents of adults with autism, how do they, you know, deal with or prepare their child when it comes to encountering a police officer? And at the time that I was doing this pitch, there had been a number of shootings of Black individuals by police officers, and there was, in some cases, questions of whether or not that they were on the autism spectrum. And so I was like, you know what, why don't I see if they are interested in this? They love the idea. So then I got a lot of parents that I, you know, found through inquiries on LinkedIn, and people that I, you know, reached out to that I knew over the period of years with our son. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to talk. And then as I started into the conversations with one person, that family, I was like, you know what, there's a lot more questions that I have. So I'm going to do the story for the Black Information Network on this, but let's set up a, you know, a time in which we do this outside of my work and do these, you know, just ask you some various questions on what you advise other parents when it comes to your child when they get to teenagehood, young adulthood. Because when that little guy stops looking so cute, you know, that's when they start, they consider them a threat. And so I was always concerned about my son and, you know, what he would he do if he were approached by an officer or yelled at by an officer. Would he freeze? Would he run? What would he, and how do I kind of circumnavigate that and help him so that he responds in a appropriate manner?
You made me think about this. Remember that case? What was it in Colorado when that young man was stopped by the police? I forgot his name. And I believe that,
and they gave him drugs, mm-hmm. and he died. Yes. Mm-hmm. I thought perhaps that he was. I even reached out to the mother of that young man, and she was insisted that he was not on the autism spectrum. So she made it very, very, very adamantly clear that she wanted to make sure that I did not make any assumptions or anything.
Well,
like
something
that.
Wasn't right in that.
Yeah.
In that whole scenario, yeah. And yeah. It's interesting that when about especially black and brown children being autistic, and when and how they are diagnosed or misdiagnosed.
Right.
Because I believe when some parents don't even recognize it, and by the time they get to school and like 4 or 5 years old, they don't even know it. And then the school has to have them tested, but I think they're not allowed to test them until they're, I don't know if it's past kindergarten or something like that, that they can test
actually
them.
You can, you as a parent can have your child tested as early as two or three years old. The school, generally, they don't get involved in terms of trying to diagnose or as sending your child to get tested. You as a parent have to advocate for your child and move forward with that. So I found with my kid, because he started out echoalic, basically repeating, where he would not verbalize. When you talk to him, he would not talk back. He would just repeat you. That was one of the signs for me where I moved forward in getting him tested, and we tested him fairly early. But that is one of the reasons why I did the interviews, and this book came out of the interviews with talking with medical practitioners and others, you know, just about some of the things that they saw in terms of the difference in how black and brown parents address different things with their young adults on the autism spectrum. So that's really where the beginnings of this started. And I did the series Black Autistic and Safe with the Black Information Network. It was a 4-part series, and they accepted that, and it really did touch a lot of people's hearts in terms of concern about, you know, what should we do when it comes to laws and how police are trained when it comes to dealing with kids and young adults on the autism spectrum. And, you know, there have been numbers of situations where people, there was recently a young man, he was, they said, quote, Asperger's, and had a meltdown, and he was shot by police.
Wow.
And that was just recently. So these are things that parents are just terrified. They're terrified of this kind of thing. And they are often, I feel like if parents share their experiences and what they have done, even though, you know, you can get medical experts, you can get experts who may talk about it, but they didn't live it. And that's what I felt like. As parents, we live it. Why not share it and help somebody else? And that's the reason why this book was born.
Oh, excellent. Helping others. And that's what it's all about with our communication and storytelling. I truly believe that we're here. If you've got that gift, then do something with it that uplifts, encourages, inspires, educates people so that they can live a better life.
Yeah. And, you know, the main message is that, you know, with every challenge, you learn something. And sometimes the way you overcome challenges can be extremely helpful to others. I mean, since 2004, there are going to be approximately 80 kids who were diagnosed with autism aging out into in 2024. I mean, 80 kids up. Approximately 80,000 kids, not 80 kids, but 80,000 children that are going to be aging into adults. And that means approximately 160,000 moms and dads who have kids that are aged out that need additional help for severe cases. And then some need just some help navigating them toward training with college or jobs. My son is what they consider high functioning, some call it low support needs. So I expect him to probably do very well and have a family, but others may have different things that they have to deal with in terms of skills that they need to help their child you know, overcome. And those are some of the things that I talk to parents about. And that's what's in this book. It is definitely kind of a guide for individuals who may have some questions. And it's always nice to be able to read about someone, see someone else that looks like you, has similar experiences like you, and hear what they, you know, had to do and what they did, because sometimes it gives you good ideas for your own personal self.
Yes, indeed it does. So Esther Dillard, I just want to say thank you so much for talking to us today about your book, Raising an Autistic Young Adult, A Parent's Guide to ASD Safety, Communication, and Employment Opportunities to Empower Black and Brown Caregivers and Their Families. And it's I'm looking at it like you'd look at a resource book. Mm-hmm. To go in there and check it out and see, like you said, other folks sharing their stories too about how things have turned out for them, what they've done, and then how you can learn from that as a parent or a caregiver. So where can people purchase your book?
They can go on Amazon, definitely. It is, all you have to do is do a search on Raising an Autistic Young Adult, or you can go to my website at EstherDillard.com.
And are you on social media at all if someone wants to share a story
on
there?
Instagram, you can see me. I am my Instagram is I am Esther Dillard, and I'm also on Facebook. You can just search me out, Esther Dillard. And let's see, I do Twitter, but not as much as Instagram and Facebook. I'm more of that. Those are the three I usually stay on.
So you can find Esther on Instagram, Facebook, you said, and Twitter, but not
LinkedIn.
So much Twitter. And LinkedIn.
And definitely find me on LinkedIn.
Definitely on LinkedIn. All right, Esther. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking your time to share with us about your life, your family, and your book. And we pray that this book be a blessing to families out there.
Thank you.
Now, thank you, audience, for joining us today as usual. Make sure that you subscribe right now by hitting that subscribe button. That way you never ever miss an episode of this uplifting, encouraging, and inspiring show. Now, if you'd like to reach me, you want to connect with me, you want to contact me, Lynn Woods, you can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Lynn Woods, LINWO ODS. And you can also find me on TikTok and Instagram at LynnWoods96, or Facebook or LinkedIn. I'm there at Lynn, LIN, last name Woods, WOODS. This has been the Lynn Woods Gospel Entertainment Show, where we talk to inspire. I'm Lynn. God bless.